So this night of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, we are looking at a very deep mystery that has really gotten glossed over, even within the Christian tradition. And this is Mary's own virginal conception. The fact that she was virgin-born of Anne, her mother. So Immaculate Conception in the Catholic Church, they call this being born without sin. What they are de-emphasizing is the fact that she was actually born of her mother, with her mother conceiving without a man. That is the Immaculate Conception. And the reason it's immaculate is that there are certain things, energies, that had to be in place in order for that to happen. First of all, on the part of Anne, and then secondly, on the part of the soul that she was calling in. So this is the mystery that we're going to look at now, and you can pass on to the next slide. So as Christy was showing, this material comes from my two books, The Cult of Divine Birth in Ancient Greece, and my second one, Virgin Mother Goddesses of Antiquity. And in these books, I lay out the case that all across ancient Greece, women were engaged in special virgin priestesshoods where they were divinely conceiving avatars, bringing high holy beings onto the planet for the purposes of bringing energies and consciousnesses that could help lead us in a time of increasing darkness. And this was not just in ancient Greece. It was in ancient Rome. It was in the ancient Levant coast, which is where we see Sarah, Anna, Mary, and Elizabeth. It was in North Africa, where we see the great queens of Egypt, who conceived the pharaohs divinely. It's really all over the world, if you know how to look. But tonight, we're looking at the most famous one of all, Mary, and her conception by Anne. So what we see here is that in the Greek, the name Anna comes from the Hebrew Hana, and that is translating it into the English Anne. But what we note are that in this very name, Anna, Hana, are similarities and linguistic connections with the Sumerian goddess names An, Nana, and Inanna, which some of you recognize as the great, great goddess who descends into the underworld to learn wisdom. And we even see this encoded in something as maternal as the word nonna in Italian. So what we're talking about is a great tradition of the Divine Mother here as being expressed through these living women. Next slide. And what we find out, now where is the story of Anna and her mother? It's not in the canonical Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's in something called the Infancy Gospel of James, or the Protoevangelium of James, which was not considered official or canonical in the Western Roman Catholic Church, but it has great weight in the Eastern Orthodox tradition. And despite it not being canonical, guess where all of the feast days to Mary come from? This gospel. Because we never hear about the Immaculate Conception in the four gospels and so forth. This is where all the material is drawn from, this Infancy Gospel of James. This is the source of all the great painters like Titian who do the presentation of Mary in the temple and so forth. Where are all these stories? They're all here. And in this particular story, we hear that Anna is very, very distraught. She's postmenopausal. She has not had a child yet. And she and her husband, Joachim, are being harassed in a way in the temple that, well, you may be wealthy, but you can't do this ritual and that ritual because you haven't had a child. So Joachim, the husband, goes off to the desert for 40 days to fast and go into a deep trance. And Anna does something very interesting. She goes into her garden and she sits by the laurel tree. This is what we hear in this gospel. She sits by the laurel tree, which is very significant because how many people know what the laurel tree is associated with? Well, it's associated with female prophecy, particularly at Delphi. The original tree was the laurel. And we have a story of an ancient priestess there named Daphne, who, to escape the onslaught of Apollo coming into that Gaia sphere, turns herself into a tree that is called laurel, and the tree takes its name from her. She merges with the tree. So here we have, in a sense, Anna merging with the tree. She's going into a prolonged rest, they call it, but this is really a trance. And she goes from wearing mourning clothes because she's not having this child and her husband has gone off to the desert and she doesn't even know if he's going to survive this vision quest. And she decides to put on what? The wedding dress. Why would she put on a wedding dress? Well, because she's going to a very special wedding. She's going to an inner divine wedding. This is the ritual. She's doing an inner tantra in an altered state of consciousness to conceive a child. We'll have the next slide now. This is Daphne turning herself into the tree to escape the clutches of Apollo, which talks about a changeover from the feminine realm into the masculine realm, and the male gods taking over these oracular sites. But somehow, in this story of Anna, we have this old throwback to women's original knowledge of how to be an oracle and how to conceive divinely. Next slide. Here is an image of her in this wedding garment. She's getting ready. And in this puts her in the tradition of Sarah, her ancestor, and the tradition of Persephone, who also goes into a wedding garment before she is connecting with the god Hades. Next slide. Now, Anna is told, because there's always an angel, which is really an angelos, a messenger, that comes in at these occasions to say, you did it. Yes, indeed. It has happened. So she is told by this angel, and there's another part of the story where she's looking at the sparrows in the tree, and the sparrows are images of great fertility. She says, yes, you have done this. And it turns out that Joachim in the desert is also visited by a messenger who says, yes, she has done it. What this whole complex of Joachim going away and Anna going to the laurel tree is telling us is that these were high holy people in the Hebrew tradition. They knew what they were doing. They had waited, Anna had waited her whole life for this to happen. It did not happen while she was menstrual, but it did happen while she was post-menstrual. Next slide. So here we have one of the things that Anna does is she calls upon her great ancestress, Sarah. And Joachim does the same thing. He calls upon the fact that Isaac was born to Sarah. If they could do it, could we not do it? And in fact, this conception that happens puts her in the lineage of these great women of the Hebrew tradition who know how to do this process. Next slide. So what we have is she gives birth to a girl. And prior to her conceiving, she vows that this child, if she conceives this child, she's going to dedicate it to the temple. That means she's going to relinquish custody of it when it's a toddler. And she's going to let specialized people take over the raising of this child. Specialized holy people. When the child is born, she rejoices that it is a girl. And this is one of the very rare stories that we hear of where a girl is the result of a virginal conception. This again is going back to the ancient way of the priestess conceiving within herself and becoming like the goddess and giving birth to the next female avatar onto the planet. So this is what's happening here. So Mary, this is her feast day. She's an immaculately born master. And she's going to live her life like a master. And the first clue we have in this direction is how she is named. She is named what we call Mary, but in the Hebrew Bible is Miriam. In the New Testament, Mariam. In the Greek, Maria. And what this name comes from, according to a scholar named D.M. Murdoch in her book, Christ in Egypt, she notes that this term, Mary, is related to what was the Egyptian epithet, Mary. And the meanings of Mary were as follows. Beloved of, desired, delight, loving, and the loving one. This was an epithet or a title that carried all of these meanings. And this name, this title, was applied to the mother goddess Isis and to other holy personnel who were born in ancient Egypt. And it usually meant this person is the beloved of the deity. So this is a priestess title that means beloved of the deity. So what this seems to be saying is this Miriam, Mary, Muri name is a title that Anna was already giving to her daughter and saying, yes, she is in the lineage of the Marys, the holy ones who are the beloved of the divine. Next slide, please. And here what we see is Leonardo da Vinci pointing out that what this is a parthenogenetic birth. There is no male sperm involved. So what happens is the female is considered a kind of an energetic twin of the mother. And Leonardo da Vinci shows this in his painting where they are nearly identical. And this harkens back to the great twinning of the goddesses that we see in many, many depictions, Demeter and Persephone, but ancient unnamed goddesses prior to them. They are two as one. Next slide. And so what we have is that we hear in the infancy gospel of James that Mary is raised in a very special way. First of all, for the first months, perhaps even years of her life, her feet never touch the ground. She is given a special diet. She is raised by these undefiled daughters of the Hebrews, which means undefiled, means they're virgins. They come in and they do special rites over this young child. What I have here is an image of the Kumari from India. And this... or it may actually be Nepal, this little child is chosen and she's treated in exactly the way that Mary would have been treated. And people consider her today a living goddess. Mm-hmm. They will sit her at a window and people will go and receive darshan or the blessing of the divine feminine through this child. So this is what happens to Mary. Next slide. Now they bring her to the temple for a great blessing by the priests. This is at her first birthday. And they asked, God of our ancestors, bless this child and give her name eternal fame among all the generations. That's what's in this infancy gospel, thought to be written possibly around 175 of the Common Era. And the priests give her this blessing, saying, exalted God, look upon this child and give her a final blessing which will not be succeeded. So the blessing upon blessing, the highest of the holy blessings. Next slide. And what happens next is that these divine virgins of the temple, Tasamiantus, the undefiled daughters of the Hebrews, are the ones who are raising this child. Next slide. And this is telling us that there are virgins in the temple. There are women who understand what virginity is, that it represents eternal wholeness of the woman within herself. And that there is a tradition of these women who know how to train one another in this process. Anna was probably trained, but we don't hear that part of the story. Next slide. And when Mary is 2, there's thought of giving her over to the temple, but they decide to wait a year. And what happens is they give her over at age 3 to these undefiled daughters. These women take the child away at nighttime, and they surround her with lamps so that she cannot see her parents who are receding in the distance. And as it turns out, it says in this gospel that she never turned to look back. She just went peaceably with these women because she's already an exalted being. She's like the female Dalai Lama. And they were amazed. Next slide. And what happens next is that at 3 years old, she is presented at the temple. And they receive her with great fanfare and blessing. She dances on the steps. Next slide. And she continues to be raised with special food and a special diet. She's fed like a dove, it says. She's fed like a dove and receives food from the hand of an angel. So this is clearly, she's being given substances that are allowing her to open up her chakras, open up her third eye, and open up her connection with the divine fully. Next slide. And where our story pauses today is that at 12 years old, and she's still in the temple, she begins to have her menses, her menstrual period. And it is at that point that the temple says, you can no longer be with us. Now you are unclean, and you must go off. And it is from here that she goes out, she ends up connecting with Joseph, and she ends up going through a divine conception ritual of her own at anywhere between 12, 13, 14, or 15 years old, and she conceives Jesus. There is much more to this story, many more details, and as you have received in your packet, I do offer that full discussion of this, the full slideshow, so you may want to partake of that. Because this is a very, very deep mystery that it is really time for us to embrace fully and understand what this is and not just consider this some kind of obscure Catholic ceremony that nobody really pays attention to. But it's time now for the Order of the Marys to come into full birth. Blessed be.